for more empowering ideas from progressive voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Coming to you live from New York City, it's Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm Mark Farrell with Liz Malone on a very cold, bitter, and quiet day in New York City. It's so quiet and so cold that it's so quiet. All right, Liz? I mean, driving in, I felt like, am I missing something? Is it a holiday? It's just so cold. People don't want to come out.
It's so cold, it's the perfect day to call in sick.
But stay not
in,
us.
Stay in bed.
We're in the lavish, warm, cozy studios of the PRN Network, Upper West Side. Post a deadly gas explosion yesterday in Harlem that took the lives of six, and hopefully the number ceases there. Dozens more were injured, and last week I was just thinking, gas explosion in New Jersey as well. Not a good couple of days, for the gas industry, and certainly the loss of life. Very unfortunate.
It's very frightening. You just never know.
You think about the pipes that are under the ground here in New York City. This gas pipe was dated back to the 1800s. But they said that actually doesn't mean or qualify that it's not below meeting its standards, meaning that it's still not strong.
Well, I think it doesn't help in this city. There's so much construction work being done, especially with the subway lines being built up Second Avenue. So there's always something being knocked down, being popped open or drilled. So I would imagine that can't be good for it.
And that includes people as well. I'm sorry. You say knock down, drill, you know. Well, hey, how you feeling today, Liz?
I think I'm feeling a little better than you are.
I'm feeling pretty good, you know. The flu's been going around this season. Actually, I think we've been pretty lucky because it's been so cold in the Northeast Corridor this season that I think a lot of the few virus strains have been a little bit dormant because it has been so cold. But when it's not, right? It's alive and kicking.
Well, I just think I know it's not funny, and I'm sure our wonderful producer Matt Iani is listening at home, and I know he's not feeling well, and we're wishing him well. But last week he mentioned he doesn't like going to the doctor, and now he has the flu, so I imagine he didn't get a shot this year.
I think he's in good hands because his nurse, live-in nurse, Gabrielle, Nurse Gabrielle, will be taking extra fine care of Matthew. Right, Gabrielle? Wink, wink. So one of the things, of course, I've been speaking about in the last couple months here on PRN.FM is overcoming adversity and alcohol. It's one of the many topics I speak about when I speak nationally to schools, corporations, etc. And I was thinking about something recently that made me question what could have happened if something did actually go wrong in a different direction. And it makes me think about, you know, the possibilities and or events that have impacted us all in life. We're going to be talking about that today. And also alcohol. I mean, understanding the role it plays in society and, more importantly, our lives. I mean, when's the last time you had a good cocktail, Liz?
I have to think about that. No, I know. It's brunch with my girlfriend a couple weeks ago, 2 weeks ago.
That long ago?
Mm-hmm. But it was a good cocktail. It was Bloody Mary.
Nice.
Nice.
No mix? Was it freshly made?
Oh, it was fresh horseradish.
Celery.
It was spicy. Oh, it was delicious.
Nice fresh lime.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for joining us today. There's an Irish bar right around the corner. But no, it's so prevalent. And I just realized the other day when I just went to one or two or three different events. One had alcohol. Second one had alcohol. The third one had alcohol. And neither one of them, any one of them, really needed to have alcohol. And it just made me think about, more importantly, how ubiquitous it is and our decisions and how we're kind of pressured on a daily, can be daily basis to partake in alcohol. So the other day, I was really excited to go to Trenton, New Jersey for our listeners worldwide. Trenton is the capital of New Jersey and a very industrial part of the state of New Jersey, fine state of New Jersey, in the early part of the revolution, industrial revolution. And as a matter of fact, there is a bridge that goes from Trenton to Pennsylvania. On the side of that bridge, you know what it says, Liz?
I have no idea.
What Trenton makes, the world takes. And it's so true because they were so industrious back there, and they had so many factories that were vital to the success of the country. But that has changed, and it's so interesting because if you think about the capital of New Jersey and the capital of our country, they're both in peril. D.C., you've ridden around the for people who are listening internationally, if you've been to Washington, D.C., if you drive far away from the monuments and the Capitol building and all the lovely, pristine monuments and locations, there's a lot of areas that you don't want to be caught in Washington, D.C., and the same goes for the capital of New Jersey, Trenton, which is only about 90 minutes south of New York City, where we're broadcasting from right now. And it's a shame because, you know, it was such a vibrant city, contributed so much to the state of New Jersey and to the country, as I said, and most of it is just in kind of ruins and severe poverty, lots of crime, lots of drugs, and lots of violence. Bad combination.
Sure is.
And, of course, the capital's there, the governor of New Jersey. What's that guy's name again?
Oh, some
he's
guy.
He's never in the news.
I never hear about him. He's such a wallflower.
Yeah. It'll come to me before the program's over. Everyone's screaming at their radio, what? Yeah, we know his name. We just don't want to give him any more attention. Anyway, I was there going to the air the other day, looking forward to this day last Saturday for a couple weeks because we got tickets, my family and I, to the Harlem Globetrotters. So I was taking my 4-year-old son and my 19-month-old baby and wife, another carload of people, friends and their kids, to go see Harlem Globetrotters. If you haven't seen them, it's a magical basketball team that just does some wild antics and very funny, and they do travel the world. It's a treat. Whether you're a child or an adult, you should see them. So anyway, I drop my kids off and my wife at the gate, and I proceed to go to the parking. Now, this is where it all went south. It was a 2 o'clock game. It's about 10 of. I didn't get into the venue till about 2:35. Why it took me so long is because this very small venue that's only about 30 minutes from my house is very desirable because it is a small venue. It's not in New York City. It's got a great seating capacity of, I'd say, maybe 4,000 the most. But it's in Trenton.
And which venue is this?
It's called the Sun Bank Arena, I believe. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything is sponsored nowadays. I don't know the real name, what it originally was called. Mm-hmm. But it's called the Sun Bank Arena, and it's only about a mile and change from the Capitol building, so it's a stone's throw. So I go there, drop everybody off, and I go proceed to park. Parking lot's full. They spin me around, go to another parking lot. Okay. Parking lot attendant said to me, okay, this lot's full. Follow that car. I said, okay, well, just tell me where to go. He's like, just follow that car. So I said, hey, buddy, you know, this is Trenton, so just give me directions. I want to make sure I know where I'm going. Just follow the car, and turns around, abruptly cuts me off and walks away. So I had no choice to follow this car. So car proceeds about 4 or 5 blocks, goes to an intersection, hesitates, and makes a right, the direction I didn't think the person should be going. So I said, you know what, who knows if this person was even going to the parking lot. So I make another turn. So I find myself in a situation where I come upon a double parked car, and there's I'd say maybe 5 or 7 kids walking towards me. Teenagers, maybe in their 20s, the most. And I have my window down, and all of a sudden I hear, hey, white boy! And a few expletives after that. So my window's down, my arms out, it's a nice day, got my hat on, sunglasses, so I'm like, uh-oh. Okay. So there's a few options that could happen here. I should probably take myself out of this variable, out of this mix right away. So I proceed to kind of step on the gas, not in a full force manner, but enough to let this the engine know that it does have V8. And I got out of the way very quickly and just got out of the neighborhood really fast. So what happened was another 20 minutes worth of being dodged around by the parking lot attendants. And the important thing is here is not the ineptitude of the facility, which I went in and spoke to the manager about and told them about the officers when I questioned them. When I was driving by them, where should I park? The facilities are full. They said they didn't know. The fact that my life, you know, was it in jeopardy? I don't know. But, I mean, thank God my kids weren't in the car and my wife. Then it would have taken it to a whole I probably would have just left. Wouldn't have even gone to the venue. Would have just left at that point. But it's really unfortunate because it really put a bad taste in my mouth because I really liked the venue. And we want to go back. And I'm going to be dealing with that venue. I put a phone call in, and I'm waiting for a phone call back to hopefully rectify this and or, you know, speak to them about their logistics, because I would like to continue being a contributing person there, or what's the word I'm looking for? Help me out here. I'm
still patron.
Patron, thank you. Customer as well, because it is close, and it's fun to have some great acts. But it made me think about how one act or a decision or a turn, a left or a right turn, like the movie Sliding Doors, you know, whether you make a train or not make a train, whether you stop to get a cup of coffee or didn't get a cup of coffee, what made you possibly avoid that near miss, or maybe you didn't avoid that near miss. Maybe somebody collided into you. So when you think about something like that, a little instance like that, and I guess it's because it's on the heels of when I lived in Hoboken. Hoboken is right across the street, the river from New York City, on the west side of New York City. A great little town. I lived there for about 5 years and moved out in 2005. But prior to me moving out, I was attacked at a dusk summer hour and survived okay, nasty concussion by about 15 to 17 kids, I was told by witnesses. And for no reason, just because I was white, tall, and they thought I, you know, probably could use a good ass licking. So, and I got one. So, I survived. But so when this happened to me the other day, this incident where I called it maybe a near miss, it made me think about that. And of course, I think subconsciously when these kids were approaching me, I didn't panic. I mean, I could easily panicked and been like, and then shouted something back. And they probably looked at me and thought I was cool as a cucumber, because I didn't even blink. Because you know what? I kind of inside, I've been down that road before. And, you know, I've grown up with, which I'm very happy to say, a very mix of races in my life. And I think that gives somebody a very good edge. Edge maybe is not the right word. Perspective and experience.
Mm-hmm.
You as well?
I think so. But I have to ask you this question. When I was listening to your story, and you were down in Trenton, and the security person or the person directing the traffic told you to follow that car, am I correct?
Correct.
Who was that car following?
No one.
How did they know where they were going?
That's why I doubted him right away and asked him for directions, but he, you know, would not supply them. It was almost like it was a setup.
Because
they're waiting. Oh, here comes the white guy. Okay, here, you sit here. You're the decoy. We'll just tell him to follow you and keep bringing him deeper into Trenton.
Because just as you were bringing up that example about the movie Sliding Doors and how one the slightest little change can completely affect the outcome, mm-hmm. you would think that in a situation like that, when you say follow that car, there's usually like a whole caravan of cars that are being directed in that whole path. But if that car had maybe turned, I don't know if you, I think you said the car turned right and you thought it was wrong. What if that car had turned left? How completely different the outcome would have been.
Absolutely.
And that's what's pretty amazing when you think about that whole phenomenon about the butterfly effect. How very small, seemingly insignificant events can have such huge events for such larger, bigger picture things that happen, you know, to people we don't even know.
And the ripple effects, the concentric circles.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely.
Deep.
But, no, I eat. The, you know, I eat this stuff up.
No, I really do
I'm
too,
a nerd
as well.
But if we didn't have this fascination with the butterfly concept, the ripple effect, butterfly effect, whichever one you prefer, there wouldn't be such a huge slew of Hollywood movies that portray this type of fantasy, that if we could go back and just change that one little thing that happened to us, and our lives could be magically 100% different, we'd all be rich, famous, living happily ever after. Because I think we all, on some level, have something in our lives that we wish we could have turned left instead of right. And we're all convinced that had we done that, our lives would be infinitely better, which of course they probably wouldn't be.
Absolutely.
But like, when you mentioned to me earlier, when you said that you wanted to talk about this topic and you mentioned Sliding Doors, I kept thinking about the movie Groundhog Day. What a fan. And of course, by the wonderful Harold Ramis, who unfortunately is no longer
Here's
with us.
Here's the Harold.
Yeah. But that movie was so heartwarming because it, I mean, I don't think there's anybody who hasn't seen that movie.
But, and if you haven't, please do.
But just that whole concept of doing it over and over again and getting it all out of your system and robbing the armored truck first and sleeping with the pretty girls, and then you get sick of it, and then all of a sudden he just decides to focus on just becoming a better person, not knowing that it's going to mean that he's going to win Andy McDowell in the end. So I just thought that was such a perfect portrayal.
It is. It absolutely is. And looking at you, I see that you have a cup of tea right in front of you. And a little thing like preparing to come to the show this morning. You live about 25, 30 minutes away by subway?
About an hour by
subway. About an hour subway. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Whew. All right. My condolences. I thought you were much closer than that. So all the variables that can take place between that point A and point B, I mean, even if you didn't stop to get that cup of tea, maybe prevented you from maybe a manhole opening cover, and you're visually impaired and you could have fallen into it. Or maybe, I mean, there's so many different things. If you stop and actually think about these things, it actually is paralyzing.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about also what can happen to you, whether you stop for coffee or not, or tea, or whatever the case may be. But if you do, this is a little bit of a digression here, but if you do think about all the dangers out there, and this also can be a positive thing too, because if you think about all the events that positively impacted people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you have a story that could have changed your family for the worse.
Yes. This happened back in 1996. I was driving down Interstate.
You didn't have your driver's license back then.
Thank you. Well, it was 96, and yes, I did have my driver's license back then, but thanks anyway, Mark. I appreciate it.
You got it.
I'm driving down Interstate 80, and out of nowhere, my front right passenger tire just blows out, and it happened so fast. All of a sudden, I'm holding onto my steering wheel, going down the highway, probably doing about 65, when the tire blew, the steering wheel locked sharp right, and I went directly into the guardrail on the side of the side
wow.
of the highway, ricocheted off, rolled backwards, and there I am on Interstate 80, which is about four lanes across.
A very dangerous
each way,
highway.
And I'm watching oncoming traffic and cars skidding not to hit me. So I'm thinking, I'm a goner. This is it. And I'm covering my face. I can't move. My car is totaled. And thank goodness a nice young couple came over. They pulled over, and the guy, you know, got me out of the car and moved my car to the side of the road, got me out of danger. That's not anywhere near the end of this story. So I was on my way to my parents' house, which is why I was on Route 80. And my parents were getting ready to take a trip to Europe. So, of course, like any mother, my mother was so worried about me. She said, there's no way we are going to Europe. We're not going to Europe tomorrow. We're going to wait. Let's take our entire trip. We'll push it back another day. So I can be here. Make sure that when you wake up tomorrow, you're feeling good. If you need to go to the
doctor.
Oh,
so that's why they were considering postponing. They just mm-hmm. wanted to make sure you're perfectly fine.
Well, let me clarify. My mother wanted to make sure I was perfectly
okay.
fine.
Your dad was 1 foot in the airplane.
My dad and my brother, their biggest concern was, oh, look, she's fine. She can walk. Well, oh my God, look at
her
all the damage.
Her mouth still works.
The car. How much is this going to cost? So my mom did not want to leave until she knew that I was going to be 100%. So I was pretty stubborn. She was a little stubborn. And I said, you know what? I'm going to be okay. I'm feeling okay. I'm going to be sore. If any accident that you can walk away from on your own is not a bad thing.
Absolutely.
So I insisted. I did not want them to change their flight. I said, go to Europe. It's your vacation. Have a wonderful time. So next day comes. I'm a little sore. I take some Tylenol. My parents take their flight and they're off to Europe. The day they flew out, that day was Tuesday, July 16th, 1996. They flew on TWA flight 800
Whoa.
From JFK to Paris. Had they moved their flight one day back, they would have been on TWA flight 800, which crashed, exploded off of Long Island. And my mother was, and I'm pinching my fingers doing the gesture, this close to changing her flight and putting them on that flight. because I was in the accident.
I just got chills.
It's one of everybody I tell the story to. They
wow.
The hairs on the back of their neck stand up because it was just unbelievable. They were so close. And
was there a phone call that transpired when she got there?
Yes.
And this took place?
Yes. After it happened.
Tears of joy, I imagine.
Well, of course, everybody in Paris knew about what had happened. Mm-hmm. And my mom called me. And I was so upset. And I just said, my God, I said, do you realize if I let you stay or if I insisted that you stay, you could. And she said, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to think about it. I'm here. We're safe. That's just, she said, I don't want to ever speak about it again.
Wow.
It was that scary. That was that close.
That's incredible, Liz. You never told me that story before.
It's not
one of those things that doesn't come up in
right. But I guess if the right timing comes up, but
sure.
it was one of those moments when, and I think for years afterwards, I used to always say, you know what, it just wasn't their time. That was my way of rationalizing it. But afterwards I thought about it some more, and for those 230 people that perished on that flight, I don't think it was their time either.
No.
So, because I don't think you can subscribe to one theory without the other.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm going to say it wasn't my parents' time, I'm then having to agree with, well, it must have been their time who happened to be on the plane. And so I just have to believe that there are things that are outside of our control. And we just have to enjoy every minute of life, because you never know when that unfortunate circumstance may arise.
We'd love to hear a story that possibly that could have changed and impacted your life, your life's trajectory. 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Liz, that's an incredible story. on a lighter note, and a much quicker note, this is you'll certainly relate to this, because Liz and I have been working in radio for a couple of years. And when I first was in college, actually my senior year, I had an internship. I was going for an internship at a radio station, WPIX 102.7, which was an iconic station. It was actually one of the most progressive radio stations and frequency in New York. Only problem is, before the station ever really took off, they always flipped the format. So here we are. It was a love song radio station, like 102.7 WPIX for lovers, okay? So here goes Mark Farrow in for an internship interview, and it went well. And I went back to school, and I got a phone call. It says, you've been accepted, blah, blah, blah. Great. So then I got another phone call from a TV production company. We'd love to have you in for an interview. I said, great. So I went in there for an interview, and they wowed me. I wowed them. So here I had two choices, TV or radio. TV, radio. Well, you know the outcome. So what was my deciding factor to go into radio? Well, I thought if I went into this radio station, it seemed pretty small scale. I'm an aggressive guy. I'm really hands-on. And I would do anything and did do anything to get ahead work-wise. And so I figured, okay, that's what I'll do, because the TV production company seemed very big and vast. And maybe I could probably not be as seen as I would in a radio station. So that was my deciding factor. And also I had a little bit of an in. My brother's friend was in high management, so I figured maybe, you know, that couldn't be a bad thing as well. So I took the internship at the radio station, and I called up the TV production company and thanked them profusely and said, you know, I think I have a better opportunity. It suits my expertise. And P.S., this is how it turned out.
And if you had made a different decision, you wouldn't be sitting here across from me.
Yeah. Exactly. I could be making fun of Matt Lauer on a different channel, maybe. And saying, Matt, please shave. Do the world a favor. What are you trying to do? You can't replace what's not on top. Just give it up. Another quick story for you. Also, we'd like to hear yours again. 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Great quick story here. I met my wife on the beach in New Jersey. Great party. About 800 people, and it was a fantastic party. I'm sitting there against the fence going like, this is the epitome of summer, the essence of summer. This is what summer should be about. And all of a sudden, the deck came crashing off this house. Electrical fires and arcing were happening, and people got hurt. No one died. There was a series of events like this in 2004. Do you remember hearing about those? There was a big balcony crash, I think, in Chicago, where a few people died.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
And so it was a series, I think three series of events throughout the nation. And this is kind of heals on 9/11, so people were extra sensitive about calamities, certainly. So I met my wife fleetingly, because she's Indian and the gentleman who threw the party was Indian. So on the Jersey Shore, to have an Indian and another Indian at a party was really uncanny. And so I met her fleetingly, and I just said to myself, wow, she's beautiful but quite young. So, and that was it. And there were so many people, the deck fell, boom, party over, you know, emergency services squads everywhere, cities in lockdown, you name it. So that was it. A few weeks later, I'm at a party. And someone walks up to me, and I'm talking to her, and we start seeing each other. And we were at a bar, and someone comes up to me, and he's using the light underneath to see a bus schedule. And I said, oh, no, don't go home on a Sunday night. Take the train up tomorrow. And it was my wife's friend. And then my wife comes up at the time to me, and we start talking, and I'm totally into her. And her friend says, kind of walks away and realizes that I'm kind of digging her friend. So I get her number and things progress. And I ask her out on a date. And long story short, she comes up to me and we don't remember meeting each other at all. Nothing's ever said about meeting at that beach party. So I'm DJing a party at the beach. And she comes up to me and she's wearing a shirt that was reminiscent of the shirt she wore that night. It was a t-shirt, and it was kind of just a cool, eclectic shirt. So all of a sudden, I looked down at her, and she probably said to herself, why is this guy who I just met staring at my chest? And I was, but I was actually looking at her t-shirt. And all of a sudden, I looked up at her, and I said to her, you were at the deck crashing party. She said to me, you were wearing a blue shirt. Just like that. And neither, I meant to also tell you that her friend who came up to me at the bar, she was at the party as well, and I met her, and she didn't remember meeting me as well.
Kismet.
So three of us. Yeah. So here we are. We put this together. It's kind of wild. So I'm DJing this party. It's going on. I can't really converse to her in a full-length conversational mode. So I said to her, hey, you know, where are you? Let's meet up after the party. I get her cell number. She has mine. And her cell phone service down the shore was kind of shoddy back then. So I pack up my truck. I'm ready to meet my, you know, her name's Pretty. I'm willing to meet Pretty. I'm really psyched. I go to call her. No service. I'm like, well, this is ironic. I met her once. Didn't remember meeting her. She didn't remember meeting me. Happenstance puts us back together again. Now I'm trying to get together with her and I can't. So you know what I just said? Oh, well. You know, I'm not a full believer in something like that, but I'm like, this is really crazy. So literally, I parked my car and I'm walking across the street from where I lived at the time in the summer house to go into this bar. Door opens and my old girlfriend walks out. And, you know, we were cool, amicable. Hey, how you doing? Great to see you, blah, 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 right? Take care. She walks past me. I open the door. Guess who's standing on the other side of the door?
I know who.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And that's it. It's history from there. Isn't that crazy, though?
Yeah, no, that's... there's a lot of twists and turns for you guys to come together.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, a lot of things could not have happened, worked out. I mean, if the cell phone, who knows? I mean, just the fact that the cell phone didn't work, and who knows if it worked, if she would have said, hey, I'm rapping to some other guy and saw my number and has been like, who's this creep? Or who knows? But the fact that I saw my history and then my future, I thought that was just pretty wild and deep stuff here.
It was your very own A Christmas Carol.
Yes, exactly. Our very own Casey, who is a creative person here at PRN.FM, who I spoke to right before the show started this morning, said that he had something very interesting happen to him. So Casey, if you're listening in the other room, please come on in. We'd love to hear your story. And we'd like to hear your story, PRN listeners. Give us a call at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Ladies and gentlemen, Casey.
Hey, Casey.
From behind a computer, welcome to the dark unknown.
How's it going?
What's your story, my friend?
So my story involves something that is a slightly different pastime from what I do here, which is that I'm a musician.
Keep it clean.
I'm a musician.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'm a songwriter.
And good for you.
I also do like music production and stuff in my in the times that I'm not here. But back about, I would say, 11 or 12 years ago, I was really gung-ho about the songwriting thing, and I was really trying to kind of have a career as a, you know, as a songwriter, performer, whatever. So kind of like acoustic singer-songwriter thing. I was trying to do as many shows as possible and travel around and get bigger and better gigs.
Get your chops, network.
All that, yeah. And I was really focused on it. And so I ended up developing, like, you know, a little bit of a relationship with, like, this one kind of talent manager person and another, like, songwriter that she managed. And they were in Massachusetts. And so I've been kind of working on this relationship for a while until they finally asked me to play a show up there that they had put together. And so, you know, it was this songwriter named Chris Parika, who was, you know, doing better and better, and her friend, who was also her manager, you know, they were kind of like on a good path, and I was all set to go up there. But the other factor in it was I was dating this girl at the time who I'd been with for a while, and she was what you might describe as high maintenance.
She was waiting for that record deal.
And
yeah, she was, Casey.
And I think, well, she was also a songwriter, and she was like pretty competitive with me and stuff, but she had sort of, you know, everyone's dated somebody who's kind of like a head case from time to time, I'm sure. And
raising my hand.
And so she would sort of have these kind of like crises at the drop of a hat that were just sort of not based on anything. But so anyway, I was scheduled to go up and do this show. I was going to like get on a bus and you know, go play this show. And she decided, you know, that was a good time to have an emotional crisis.
Why not? Fitting time.
And made me feel as if I needed to stay and like help her through this difficult
time. Console her.
So I had to make the call of whether or not I was going to go play the show or stay. And I chose to cancel the show. Or I chose to cancel, like, my part in the show. And they were kind of like,
how could you do this?
Really?
Yeah.
You know? And I was like, I'm sorry. Like, I just kind of had to make the call. Mm-hmm. But I've often wondered about that. I mean, that's not the only thing like that happened. But I've often kind of thought about, what if I had gone and played that show? You know? What if I had said,
so
look, I'm sorry you're, you know, I'm sorry you're having trouble, but I got to go do this.
You
know?
What was the fallout? Did you continue your relationship with those two?
Not really. Not
Did
really.
Did they drop you like a hot potato after that?
Well, we're still friendly, and I'm still friendly with the lady who's the manager. She's now out in Seattle, like running a label, but
professionally speaking, not the who cares about the crazy woman? I'm talking about the professional relationship.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Okay.
That's what I'm talking about.
So after that, did they ask you to gig with them again?
No.
Okay.
That was the only time. And we had some other sort of like, you know, kind of like business type of relationship type of things happening.
So let's put this in perspective. Out of 12 months out of a year, how many dreams do you have where you felt like that could have been a linchpin to your career?
Yeah, very few.
All right, so not too bad in that case. You're good standing. All right, you're in good standing.
Very well adjusted.
Yeah, very well adjusted.
Very few. I mean, only because I usually say yes to things, you know, when I feel like it's that important. And when I feel like it's that important, I say yes. So.
And your friend, is she healthy, thriving?
My
former lover?
Oh, we don't speak.
Did you write a sad song about
her? We don't speak,
her?
Actually. She's one of the very few people who I've felt like I needed to completely eject from my life.
Good for you.
Which I did.
And you're a better man for it.
So down the road, if I turn on the radio and I hear a song titled Wicked Paramore, I'll know that was written by Casey?
No, maybe not. I tend to obfuscate a little more in my songs than that. they're not usually so literal.
So we're going to have to talk about this more offline, though, Casey. We're going to need an official theme song here for Insight.
Yeah, I do make some of the music for some of the station IDs on PRN.
Good. Name one or two of them so our listeners may be familiar with. Or hum them. We want you to sing. Get your guitar.
No, I don't think I can really sing.
Let's have an Adam Sandler moment here.
I don't think I can really sing them, but we'll try and play one Maybe we can fit one in after the
show. You
know,
maybe we'll listen to this break, and Giselle is going to play a few promos coming up. And
yeah, one of them will be.
Exactly.
I'll let you know whether it is or not.
You listen, and on the flip side, we're going to be talking about alcohol. Don't go anywhere. It's PRN.FM and Insight.
Stay tuned for the best information on health and nutrition, current events, economics, the environment, and more on PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
Hi, everyone. John Mueller here from the Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you exactly what it's like to live, work, play, do business, and even retire. In fact, Latin America is a place you can still live the good life on a measly Social Security check, and I'll show you how. And now a little reminder of a schedule change. On Sunday, March 2nd, we're moving the show to 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 9:30 Pacific Time. And starting March 7th, the Friday Expat Files show will be moving to 11 a.m. Eastern Time instead of 11:30. So tune in Sundays and Fridays to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America, and see what you're missing.
What's a man now? What's a man mean? Is he rough or is he rugged? Is he cultural and clean?
Yes, that was Joe Jackson asking what it means to be a real man 30 years ago. Have we figured it out yet? What does it mean to be a man today? How are we doing, fellas? Confused? Angry? Thrilled? How are your romantic relationships? What about being a dad? Who says real men don't talk about their feelings? We're gonna. Join me, Michael Kimmel, every Tuesday at 3, beginning on April 15th, on The New Man Show, to talk about it. Here on the Progressive Radio Network at PRN.FM.
Have you heard? The Burt Cohen Show brings you the hidden truths behind the stories that affect us all and gives you the information you need to build freedom, community, and a much better world. Hi, this is Burt Cohen. Recent shows include the status of freedom of the press under President Obama. Is it time to make the Federal Reserve a public utility? Is the dream of Israel over? How is the Tea Party like the Confederacy? The true history of the National Rifle Association, and how is 2014 like 1914? The Burt Cohen Show, every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. There's really nothing like it.
This is PRN.FM. Tune in anytime for the latest in progressive news and ideas. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
And welcome back to Insight on PRN.FM, especially to our friends listening internationally. Love to hear from you. 888-874-4888. Is there an event that happened in your life that changed the course of your life's trajectory? Liz Malone and myself, Mark Farrell, have been talking about some events that have impacted us. And Casey, our creative director here at PRN, just shared a story about how he could have been playing with Nirvana. Could have been playing, but, you know, well, we won't know the outcome of that, will we, Casey? I'm sorry, I don't mean to muddy up the waters for you, Casey. But Liz, before we move on to alcohol, a more important topic, by the way, I want to talk about some things very quickly that could positively, in the future, impact our lives. Both of us share one thing in common besides radio. Well, a lot of things in common. But physically, what do we share in common? Keep it clean. Because you're in a relationship and I'm married. Okay, I'll put it out there. We both have visual impairments. And both of us, your RP, retinitis pigmentosa, and retinoschisis, they're steadfastly working on cures. So our lives will take a major turn for the better if they develop cures and can benefit our vision.
Hopefully, we will.
So think about that. Have you thought about that?
I do think about it, but I try not to think about it too much because I don't want to want it so bad that it paralyzes me or keeps me from doing things that that I can be doing now.
Understandable.
Yeah.
But it's also nice to have sort of that dangling of the carrot as well. And you're an optimist. Well, I mean, I'm a pure optimist.
No, hope,
a realist as well.
Hope is always a good thing.
But beautiful thing.
I just don't want it to consume me to the point where it becomes unrealistic. I have to always live for the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that, lastly on this topic, that in terms of positive things that have changed your life, you know, I was told ever since I was very, very young and understanding what driving was all about, that I was never able to drive a car. And when my 17th birthday came and went, I wasn't able to drive because of my permanent visual impairment. And then it came out with these glasses when I was age 25 that permitted me to drive a car, much like your dentist wears a bioptic telescopic device. So that has changed my life immeasurably. The fact that it opened my world, you know, from riding a bicycle for 25 years, which I still do and love to do, but to getting a driver's license. Now my goal is, when my vision's cured, can I get a pilot's license? Really, I would love to. And I wouldn't try to, you know, do crazy things, but I would just love to, even maybe just to even obtain a pilot's license, not even fly planes, but just to actually go through the process would be just a kind of a life-fulfilling dream.
And I will stand there on the runway waving at you, wishing you good luck. Bon voyage. Have a nice flight.
Okay. And that's a great segue to the next topic, because then I will raise a glass and say, you know, Prost, Nastrovia. Cheers, because alcohol, that's our next topic. Alcohol is so ubiquitous. I mean, when's the last time you went to a party where majority of people were not imbibing?
Never.
Yeah. Especially in the tri-state area. In New York City, I mean, everywhere you go, it's so prevalent. It's not even something. I mean, you go into the workplace. On Fridays nowadays, especially in more of the techie companies, I mean, it's common to see a beer on the desk.
It's actually woven itself into the fabric of business.
Mm-hmm.
I remember working in radio. There's a lot of entertaining that happens, especially if you have clients. And it was a rare occasion to not have an event at least 2-3 times a week, easily, with clients.
Now, this is an event you would either host and or go to.
A little bit of both.
Exactly.
Sometimes you were just the one that laid down your credit card on the bar. You were picking up the tab. Sometimes you were going to a concert. Sometimes it was a listening party. You just never knew what was going to happen, but there was always something.
And being the host, it's not something that you can do and put down a credit card and have potential buyers, clients, or clients, future clients you're trying to lure to not imbibe with them, because that is not cool. You're not going to make them feel comfortable and wanted.
Exactly. You don't want them to feel that you're passing judgment. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, no, I mean, it was just such a big part of it.
I remember bartending for years, and, you know, when people buy you shots, the old-fashioned way, when somebody buys you a drink, as a bartender, you're not supposed to decline a shot or a drink. So, you know, most of the time, I didn't decline, and or would do a real, but then, you know, we've seen this in movies before, but on the Upper East Side, when I used to bartend at Richter's and also at the Jersey Shore, at the I'd say New Jersey famous Leggetts in Manasquan, New Jersey, that, you know, we would put a bottle aside and pour it, and it would be straight water, because, you know, you got to function, and or you just don't feel like it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes. And the reason why I bring this up, because, you know, a few events that I've been going to recently, and then I was talking to my wife a few years ago, and before we had kids, and we'd be talking about visiting friends of ours with kids, and we'd go out with them and or go over their house, and we'd be like, do you think they kind of put a few back too many? And my wife would be like, yeah. I'm like, wow. I mean, we're married, but we don't have any kids. But now, a few years down the road, with a four-year-old and a year and a half, I'm like, hey, you want to uncork? I kind of get it. But, you know, it's totally in check. I mean, we may have a bottle of wine every week and a half. I mean, it's, you know, nothing, especially between two people. But, you know, it makes me think about, you know, the more events I go to, especially in the industry, whether it's in TV, radio, and or when I'm on the road speaking, you know, you go to a hotel bar, you know, everyone's drinking. You know, when I go to a bar, I sit there, and nine times out of ten, I'll order unsweetened iced tea, fresh brewed. I think it's like the cat's meow. That's what I live for. And people kind of look at me like, you know, like, what, really? that's what you're having. You know, I just like sitting at bars. I feel comfortable there, especially when you're eating alone, when you're on the road. Mm-hmm. You feel that, you know, it's a natural fit for me.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I feel like I get kind of judged. And I used to feel a little bit uncomfortable about it, but now I really don't care. I mean, I notice it, but I could care less because I'm happy buying the guy next to me a drink. And I come from a lineage of alcoholism. My father was an alcoholic. That was the demise of their marriage. The last of five kids, I grew up with a second father. I say a second father. It's the same father, but he was a different man from my my oldest sister and my brother Mike, because he was not a violent man, but he was angry, worked really hard in sales. You know, the typical businessman lunch, you know, 3, 4, 5 drinks, get in his car and drive home from the city.
Mm-hmm. Liquid lunch, yeah.
Absolutely. And guess what? And it would stop a mile away from home and have a few more. I guess to make the reentry process home a little bit more tolerable. Whoops. What does that say about the marriage? You know, it's bad. So anyway, so when I was about 6, 7, 8, parents split up and I saw the whole thing, my father, you know, coming apart, the hinges and just really falling apart, got himself dry, took him 2 or 3 times. And then I saw a different person. And then my brother went through a little bit of a light stage of being concerned about his drinking and his consumption. And then, of course, was my college years, which just, you know, was a complete debaucherous 4 years and didn't stop after that. And it was my wake-up call that I had a little bit of an intervention at age 35 by two people who care for me a lot that said basically, you know, hey, you've been doing a lot of things that were really out of control, and they witnessed a few of them. And, you know, a lot of people thought it was very funny, and I thought it was very funny as well, and I was the life of the party, and when was it going to calm down? I kind of, the drug subsided a little bit at that point, but then I said to myself, okay, this is a serious business. If two people who I love and who love me very much say to you, okay, you have a problem, and they confront you with a professional, then you probably have a potential problem and some warning signs right there. So that was kind of a life-changing moment for me.
Well, I don't really have a really big story personally about addiction to alcohol, but I was very, very curious about what makes it so addictive. So, you know me, I love my research studies. Marcus, you've got that grin on your face.
Oh, let me have it.
You know what's coming. There were
Should I put my chair back and feet up?
This is good. This is really interesting. There was a study done at the University of California in San Francisco. And the researchers had two panels. They had one panel of participants who were considered heavy drinkers and another set who were moderate drinkers. And the goal of the study was to have them consume alcohol and do PET scans on their brains to see what was actually happening.
While they're actually consuming it.
Well, once they're intoxicated, okay. I guess you could say. So what they discovered, and this happened in all cases, the heavy drinkers and the moderate drinkers, is that when we drink, endorphins are released to two key areas of our brain. And one is the nucleus accumbens, which is linked to addictive behavior.
Gotta love Latin.
Yes. So the other area of the brain is the orbital frontal cortex, which is linked to decision making.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess...
Inhibitor.
Yeah. So I guess in other words, you know, when we drink, these wonderful endorphins that make us feel good and we feel no pain.
Life is so good.
Everything is wonderful. Just flood that area of the brain and it screws up our decision-making abilities.
So you say, Liz Malone.
And it keeps us super, super addictive. But I was fascinated when I got to read this because it just made so much sense. You know, I like to... You know, understand why things happen.
You know, I'm really pissed off that this study, number one, took place on the West Coast. It should have taken place here, and we could have been, you know, participants in this, and we could have been part of the blind study.
Maybe next time.
Maybe next time. But, you know, we know that's true. I mean, that's one of the reasons why people drink, is because it helps them forget things. A lot of, especially nowadays, you know, with so many veterans returning on a serious note, that, you know, they have to drink because of the mental health implications, PTSD, depression, bipolar, I mean, everything. And there's so many reasons why people do drink, and that's why so many people, when they do stop drinking, the problems actually just begin, because they begin to address these issues, which is good. You know, it sometimes obviously scares people a lot, and people never want to confront those, and that's why the alcoholism just, you know, ensues and continues for years, and either because they die from something else, or they just, you know, drown themselves or become diabetic and whatever. The ramifications can be endless. But we all know that's the case. And I drank for many reasons, and I always just thought I did. And a portion of it was just to feel happy. I mean, I'm a happy guy when I don't drink. And sometimes I can just be way too happy when I do drink. And we all know some people who are just miserable when they drink.
You have enough endorphins going on already, don't you?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. So, you know, we'd love to hear from you, as usual, why you drink or why you don't drink. And that's actually even probably more of a compelling story. 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And by chance, if you're not able to call, you can always email me, mark@markfarrellmotivation.com, mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. I know our producer is laid up on the couch, and we're hoping he's well today. I know he has a lot of antics and drunken debauchery stories that he would share with us, but we'll just have to put those aside for the moment until he's clear-headed enough to share those with us. But I'm sure there's probably something, Liz, in your life that, you know, that you probably realize that could have changed your life in a different aspect, maybe that was based around alcohol, going back to our first story today. Possibly.
Well, I was hit by a drunk driver when I was 17 years old.
And that is very revealing today, Liz.
Yeah.
Another major point that I've never known about.
I was riding in my parents' brand new car, and I think it was maybe off the showroom floor for not even a week.
Wow.
And I was at a red light, and kabam, didn't even see it coming.
And you were fine?
Well, my car then hit another car that hit another car. But if I had been the first car sitting at the red light, I would have been pushed right into the intersection.
See, now this story should have gone on the heels of your other story.
So
about
kind of
30 minutes ago.
It combines
ago.
The two things, the
yes,
alcohol and the...
Were you really seeing, wanting to see if I'm doing my job over here? I pulled this out of you and I wove them together.
You see, look
what
at
what magic we're creating.
Look at
here.
That. We're just tying it all together.
Wow.
Put a nice bow on it.
I think we're going to actually have to have a cocktail for lunch today. Well, maybe not. And maybe you can tell me some other interesting, compelling stories about your life that I've never known about. Wow, Liz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm really happy that you're here. Oh, my God.
And, I've been tossed around quite a
and
bit.
When you make a left out of the building today, I'm going right. That's for sure. Oh, my God. But, you know, we think about this, and we're making light of this, but, you know, you think about the long-term effects, I mean, on your health, your friendship, your career. I mean, this is something that obviously you really can't hide. I mean, I know many functioning alcoholics, and it's unfortunate. I actually saw someone who I... a fairly close acquaintance of mine, so much so that I have to be very careful on how I kind of introduce this story. But I ran into this person not too long ago in a store, and apparently they'd been dry, and I could tell within nanoseconds that this person was hitting a bottle. And I was just like, ah. Oh. And this person usually confides in me as well. And it's not my place to say, obviously, you had a little slip there. And they're very well composed and everything, but it just kind of made me crestfallen that and it happens. I mean, it's a disease, and and there's been a lot of research on this, Liz. I'm sure you know it, that a lot of people who are predisposed don't have the ability, versus the very small percentage of people who do have the ability to just stop either using drugs or alcohol. Like, I used a lot of cocaine and I was able to stop. Like, I would get to that tipping point where I'd be like, all right, I'm getting a little scared here, and I'm able to stop. Anyway, unfortunately, in terms of stopping, that's all we have time for on PRN.FM. My thanks to Liz Malone. Thank you, Liz, for sharing some really deep and insightful stories. And again, be safe. Matt, rest up, my friend. Hope you're feeling better, Ioni. Special thanks always to Jason, Casey and Giselle, and of course to Gary Null. Gary Null's up next. Always listen to Insight right here on Thursdays from 11 a.m. to noon Eastern Standard Time on Progressive Radio Network. I'm Mark Farrell. Have a great day.